through them because our lesson is a little longer than usual tonight. We'll see how it goes. Number one, God used the institution of blank to demonstrate the rampant wickedness of man before the flood. What institution did he use to demonstrate the wickedness before the flood? Number two, God said the imagination of man's heart was blank, blank, blank. Three words. Remember, we emphasize it. Blank, blank, blank. Three blanks on number two. You know, of all places for people to cheat on a test, this is the worst place to cheat. I want you to put down what you remember, not what you and your neighbor remember, okay? All right, number three. The man who repents, he changes his what? The man who repents changes his what? For is true or false? God warned Noah what he was going to do before he did it. True or false? God warned Noah what he was going to do before he did it. Number five, Noah found favor in God's sight because Noah did three things. He was just, he was diligent in his service to God, and he did what with God? He did what with God? Noah did what with God? Number six, Noah was given specific instructions on building the ark, and he did exactly as God said. 7. I lost my place here. Noah collected at least two pairs of every living thing and took them into the ark. At least two pairs of every living thing and took them into the ark. That's number 7. Number 8. God told Noah when to get on board the boat and when to get off. Number 9, Noah had to decide when he had finished his preaching and could shut the door. Noah had to decide when he had finished his preaching and could shut the door. Number 10, God destroyed the wicked without warning. Number 11, it rained 40 days and 40 nights. The waters of the deep were erupting and the windows of heaven poured forth. Number 12, the first thing Noah's family did after leaving the ark was to worship God. 13, God promised Noah that he would never again destroy the earth. 14. We would not rate Noah's preaching as a huge success. 14. We would not rate Noah's preaching as a huge success. 15. The Lord has said that what would be called, but what would be chosen. The Lord has said what would be called, but what would be chosen. 16. Water saved Noah and his family. The like figure whereunto what saves us? Water saved Noah and his family. The like figure whereunto what saves us? 17. The next time God reaches the limit of his patience, the world will be destroyed by what? Okay, do you have any questions? Which one? Very first one, God used the institution of what to demonstrate the rampant wickedness of man before the flood? Yeah, you just had 17. That's my goof. Okay. Huh? Number two, God said the imagination of man's heart was blank, blank, blank. Number two, God said the imagination of a man's heart was blank, blank, blank. That's two. Okay, number 12. The first thing Noah's family did after leaving the ark was to worship God. Anything else? Number one, God used the institution of what to demonstrate the wickedness before the flood? Nine, Noah had to decide when he had finished his preaching and could shut the door. Anybody else? 16, water saved Noah and his family the life figure whereunto what saves us? Any others? Okay, number one. We'll start over here tonight, Marilyn. God used the institution of what to demonstrate the wickedness? Marriage, right. Two, God said the imagination of man's heart was what? All right, you got one more word. Anybody? No, not daily. Only evil continually. Only evil continually, okay? When man repents, he changes his what, Alice? His way or his will? All right. Four, God warned Noah what he was going to do before he did it. True. Noah found favor in God's sight because he did three things, and one of them was to walk with God. Gladys? Walked with God. Six, Noah was given specific instruction on building the ark, and he did exactly as God said. True. God destroyed the... No, wait a minute. I'm going to get mixed up again. Seven, Noah collected at least two pairs of every living thing and took them into the ark. This is kind of tricky. I'm picking on you, Fred. I designed it for you. Seven pairs of clean, two pairs of unclean, but was it every living thing? There's a sticker. It was not every living thing. What was it? Every living thing that breathed air. None of the fish died. None of the whales died. None of those things died. Just birds and animals and man. Okay? That was a tricky one. That was nasty. Okay. Number eight. God told Noah when to get on board the boat and when to get off. Mary Alice? True. Noah had to decide when he'd finish his preaching to shut the door, Norley. That's false, isn't it? God decided it. Rain 40 days and 40 nights, Vern. Right? True. Did I skip one? Yeah, I did skip. I skipped 10, didn't I? Okay, I'm sorry. God destroyed the wicked without warning. Number 10. That's false. He didn't destroy them without warning. And then 11 was true. 12. The first thing Noah's family did after leaving the ark was worship God. Vern? True. Okay. The next one, Roseanne, God promised Noah he'd never again destroy the earth. False. He didn't promise he'd never destroy the earth. He promised he'd never destroy it that way. See, that was a tricky one, too. Okay, Ruth, we would not rate Noah's preaching as a huge success. Why wouldn't we? We're talking about we wouldn't rate him, not God didn't rate him. We wouldn't rate him. How many people did he save by his preaching? Seven besides himself. So he was 700-fold, wasn't he, preacher? Wouldn't you say he was 700-fold? If he gained one person, that's 100-fold, isn't it? 100%. If he gained seven persons, he was 700-fold. How many of us can boast of converting seven people in our whole life? I doubt if we could, but we wouldn't rate him as a huge success as a preacher because he only converted eight people. So 6:15, the Lord has said that what would be called but what would be chosen. Mark? Right. 16, what... Water saved Noah and his family the life figure whereunto what saves us, Lisa? Baptism, right. 17, the next time God reaches the limit of his patience, the world will be destroyed by what? Mike, you get the last one. Fire, right. It rained 40 days and 40 nights. That was 11. Did I get you mixed up along with me? We're going to study in 1 Samuel, the 15th chapter tonight. Here's another place, if you're working with a candidate, that you can find out how well he knows the Old Testament. If you can't find 1 Samuel, you can just put in your little book, he doesn't know much about the Old Testament. Just by way of background, 15th chapter. Just by way of background, God chose Abraham out of all the world after the flood because Abraham worshipped him and believed in him. And God told Abraham out of him he would make a great nation. There's a lot of history between the time God told Abraham he'd make a great nation out of him and our story tonight. As a matter of fact, the children of Israel, which was Abraham's grandson, Israel or Jacob, were down in Egypt and they were slaves there. But God brought them out of the land of Egypt by Moses. And he took them up to a mountain and gave them the law of Moses. God wanted to be their king. God was their king. Until they looked at all the nations round about them and they said, give us a king. Like all the others that can go before us and fight for us and all this. So God wasn't happy with the request. It'd be like saying a man saying to his wife, give me a divorce because I found another woman. That's really what the children of Israel said to God. Give me another king because I don't like the king I've got. And God was very displeased, but he did give them the king. And he gave the king through Samuel. Samuel was the prophet of God at the time. And in this dispensation, the prophet always superseded the king. Because the prophet had to be more important than the king in order to appoint the king. The prophet talked for God. So God still kept the preeminence, but he allowed him to have a figurehead king that would go before them. This king in this instance was Saul, the first king of Israel. God made it very plain to the prophet and to the king that he was still in control. God was still in control of both of them. This man couldn't have been a prophet without God, and Saul could not have been king without God's help. In the first verse we'll read tonight, we'll see this. And we'll start reading, let's see, where will we start reading? Larry, I guess we'll start with you. Read the first verse, please. Yes, 15th chapter, 1 Samuel. Okay, whose people are they, Larry? The Lord's people. Not Saul's people, not Samuel's people, the Lord's people. The Lord claimed them for himself. You see, the Lord has a finger in all power on earth. Whether it's the king, or the policeman, or the county judge, or whoever it is, they serve at the pleasure of God. Paul said in Romans the 13th chapter that all power is from God and no power on earth exists without God giving it to someone. You remember Jesus before Pilate. Pilate says, don't you know I have the power to crucify you or to release you? And Jesus told him, you wouldn't have any power at all if it weren't given you from God. So Samuel is reminding Saul where he got his power, where he got his king. He's also reminding him that it's God's people, not Saul's people. We ought to be reminded of this sometimes too. It is not my church, it's the Lord's church. I happen to be a member of it. I happen to belong to it, but it's not mine. It doesn't belong to me. So any power that you have, any power that we have today, we do it at the pleasure of God, and God can take it and God can take it away. He can give it and take it away. Samuel is reminding Saul of this right at the start, because he's going to give him a little job to do. Now let's see what the job is. The second verse, Beverly. How many of you remember the story? Down here in Egypt, when the children of Israel came up out of Egypt, they had to go through the land of Amalek. They asked permission to go through. This is just a brief history. They asked for permission to go through to get to the promised land. The Amalek said, yes, go ahead and go through. And as soon as the army and all the men and the strong people got through, and it was just women and children and weak, old people, they attacked them and destroyed a lot of them. Well, God didn't allow Israel to do anything about it at that time because they weren't in a position to do anything about it. Amalek had a good army. But now it's a reverse. Saul has an army now. And it's a better army than Amalek has. So God says, I want you to go down there and, because I remember this, do you know how long it was between that time and this time? 400 years. Now you wouldn't think God would remember a person's wickedness or a nation's wickedness 400 years, would you? But he did. There's a saying in the Old Testament that says, because judgment against an evil work is not executed speedily, the hearts of the sons of men is fully set in them to do evil. If we don't get the punishment right at the time we do the act, sometimes we think we got by with it, don't we? And apparently that was the case of Amalek. He thought he got by with it, but God remembered it. God always remembers when we do something against his people. And he'll repay us for that, won't he? So the Amalekites, God said, I remember how he laid wait in the way and he attacked my people. Okay, Peter, third verse, please. Okay, Saul's got the assignment. Do you understand the assignment, Peter? Do you mean God told him to kill all the little babies too? Not only babies of humans, babies of animals, babies of everything that walked. Does that sound like God to you? Here's why I'm bringing this to your attention. God had brought judgment on Amalek, hadn't he? And in God's eyes, they weren't fit to live. Just like after the flood, when a man killed another man, God said that he would have to die at the hands of men because he wasn't fit to be an impression of God on the earth. So God here says, I want you to go down there and I want you to kill everything. Now, would that be easy? Suppose you're riding on a horse and you got a sword, and you come up to a little baby sitting in the street like I've seen in the wartime, and you must run a sword through him. That's difficult, isn't it? Matter of fact, it kind of makes me sick at my stomach. This wasn't an easy job for Saul, even. And Saul was a man of war. But God doesn't always give us easy assignments, does he, Peter? No. Sometimes God gives us a difficult assignment to prove whether we'll be obedient in all things, as Paul said. It kind of goes against our nature to kill somebody. And yet here he says, just go down there and obliterate the whole country. And sometimes when we have war in our world today, we wonder why God allows them to just be annihilated. Well, here's the reason, right here. God allows it because he has judged that they're wicked. And they haven't repented. They've had 400 years to repent. And they haven't repented. So God's saying, just destroy them. Now, Saul is faced with a decision. What's his decision, Peter? You're getting ahead of my story. You're going to spoil my whole story here in a minute. He has to make a decision just like Eve had to make a decision. What decision did the devil force Eve to make? Whether she would listen to God or listen to the devil. Now, what does Saul have to make a decision about? He has to make a decision, will I do what God said or will I not do what God said? I don't like it. I don't want to do it, but I got to do it if I'm going to please God. How do I know that I have to do it if I'm going to please God? Go back to our original thinking. Faith, without faith, it is impossible to please him. And faith comes by hearing. All right, you just heard God said, go down there and wipe them all out. Is he going to do it or isn't he? It's going to hurt, isn't it? But he has to decide. He doesn't have any choice. And neither do you and I. Sometimes when God says to us, you must do this thing, and we don't want to do it, but God said you must do it, then we have to decide, well, am I going to obey God or am I not going to obey him? And we have this kind of a situation nearly every day of our life, in one way or another. Now let's see if Saul did it. Fourth verse, please. And the fifth verse, please, Marge. Now, is he ready to go? Is he going to do it? Does it look like he's going to do it? Can you imagine how much effort it would take to get 210,000 men together and get them ready to fight and surround the whole city and get it all in camp ready to go? Saul went to a lot of work, didn't he? It looks like he's going to do what God said, doesn't it? All right, now let's see what happens next. The sixth verse. Bob, you read six and seven. No, six. Just six.
And Saul said to the Canaanites, go to the tar, get you down among the Amalekites, lest I destroy you with them. For you showed kindness to all the children of Israel when they came up out of Egypt. So the Canaanites departed from among the Amalekites.
All right, now I want you to reason with me a little bit, Bob. Here we are. Here's Amalek. And here's Saul and all his army, Saul and Israel, with 210,000 men. And here are the Kenites right here in the middle of Amalek. You see, God not only remembers what we do that's wrong, he remembers what we do that's right too, doesn't he? The Kenites showed kindness to the children of Israel. Why didn't God say, oh, it's just too much trouble to get those people out of there. I'll just wipe the whole slate clean. Because God doesn't destroy the righteous with the wicked, does he? Ever. But suppose God had said to those Kenites, you get out of there, and they said, oh no, we're staying right here. This is where we live, and we're staying right here. What would they have become, Bob? Right. Now this is similar to the situation we have today, but I want to draw your attention to one in the Old Testament. Here's Sodom. God said, I'm going to destroy it, he said to Abraham. Abraham said, you're going to destroy the righteous with the wicked? Won't the God of all the earth do right? And God answered back, yes. So they went to Sodom and Gomorrah and looked for... What was the lowest number God would take? 10 people. If you can find 10 righteous people in that city, I'll spare it. He couldn't find 10 righteous. How many did he find? Anybody know? Two? Who was in Sodom? Lot and his wife and his two daughters. So he found four, didn't he? Did he destroy the four? No, he didn't. He sent an angel and got those four out before Sodom was destroyed to keep his word that he would never destroy the righteous with the wicked. You and I don't ever have to be afraid of being destroyed, even if God destroys the world, if we're righteous. That's the big if, isn't it? If we're righteous. So today, here we are in the middle of the world. What does God tell us? Is he going to destroy the world, Ori? Is he going to destroy this world? Yes, I'm going to destroy the world. Is he going to destroy me with it? Only if I don't do what he said. Only if I'm not righteous. Can he get me out of the world? Yes, Paul said in the Thessalonian letter that those who are faithful, when Jesus comes back, will be caught up to meet the Lord in the air, and so will they ever be with the Lord. I don't have to worry a bit about being burned up with the earth if I'm righteous. But I have a lot to worry about if I'm not, don't I? So these Kenites would have become Amalekites if they had refused to obey God and listen to what he said. All right, he's got them out now. Seventh verse. Ginger? From Havilah. Now, if we just stop there, did Saul do what he was asked to do? Ginger? What did he tell him to do? Go and kill everybody in Amalek. Did he go and kill everybody in Amalek? If we stopped there, he did, didn't he? Now, you know the story too, and that's why you're shaking your head. No, he didn't do it all. Read the next verse, please. Okay, now let's look at our proposition here. If he had 210,000 men when he went down there, if I were going to utterly destroy a country, I'd want twice as many men as they had to make sure I'd got the job done, wouldn't you? So let's say that just for sake of argument that he destroyed 100,000 people. How many did he really destroy if there was 100,000 there? 999 people. Would you say that's a pretty good job? Did he do a pretty good job? If God gave you 100,000 commandments and you kept 99,999, would you say you did pretty well? I would. I'd be patting myself on the back like that, but I can't. We would be patting ourselves on the back because we would think we'd done something, wouldn't we, if we killed 99,999 people. I want us to see this like Saul must have seen it. He kept what? One. He kept one. What does that one represent in yours and my life, Beverly? Huh? One sin. One sin. James says, if I keep the whole law and offend in one point, I'm guilty of all because I'm a breaker of the law, aren't I? That doesn't mean that I didn't keep the other 99,999, does it? But it means that I'm a breaker of the law and God will not allow that. God just won't tolerate it, will he? So here, he kept one, and that's yours and my little reservation when we come to God. Well, I'll serve you, but I won't do this. I won't do this. I won't give up this. I won't stop doing this. And those aren't all horrible things. Was it good that he kept Agag? Was it good for Agag? Yeah, it's good for Agag, but that's the only one it was good for, was Agag. He took Agag, the king of the Amalekites, alive and utterly destroyed all the people with the edge of the sword. Now look at the ninth verse, please. That. Why did it say Saul and all the people did this? Why does it say Saul did? His army. Could Saul have stopped it? Blow? Could Saul have stopped them from sorting the good sheep from the bad sheep? He was the commander, right. So when he saw the people doing that, what was his job? To stop them, wasn't it? If he was going to be the commander. Now suppose they said, well, we're not going to stop it. Let's imagine ourselves in the Israelites' army, and here you walk for weeks, or days anyway, and here you see a big black Angus heifer, and you can just taste a great big hunk right out of her rear end on a grill. Wouldn't that taste good? We lick our lips and think, oh boy, I'd love to have a steak like that. Well, you can have it. No, you can't. Just run a sword through her and leave her lay and let her rot. What a waste, you say. Was it a waste? A lot of the people thought that anything they put on the altar was a waste because nobody enjoyed it. But was it a waste if God said to put it there and just leave it there and burn it up, let it go up in smoke? No, it was not a waste because God commanded it. Now, this is hard for us to reason. And I think if we'd been there, we would have been tempted to keep that big Angus heifer too. Don't you, Carol? If we were hungry and he said to destroy everything that's alive, I would have been tempted to try to sneak her in behind me or some way. And they did it. Look at all the trouble they went to. Imagine sorting all the animals of 100,000 people and deciding which one would pass and which one wouldn't. Can't imagine it, can you? Look at all the trouble they would have saved themselves if they just accepted what God said and destroyed the whole mess, and then they could have gone home. But no, they had to sort them all and decide which one was good. Now, what's the decision here? I am going to decide one, is it good or bad? Aren't I? If I'm one of those soldiers. What had God already said? They're all bad. Well, it doesn't look bad to me. Well, that doesn't matter. God said they're all bad. I want them to die right where you find them. That looks senseless, doesn't it? You see, God doesn't always explain everything to us, why he does things. He doesn't have to explain. He did explain in this case why, and we'll see why. But Saul here is laying part of the blame on the people, but really the blame came right back to Saul because Saul was the commander of the people. Now we're going to see what happens when it's all over. Mark, you take the 10th, 11th verse. Here's God, and here's Saul. Mark, who left who first? Saul left God. He left off following God, didn't he? He went away from God. Now what's God going to do? He's going to go away from Saul, isn't he? But I want to emphasize this point. God never leaves a man. Man leaves God. It's never the other way around. It's initiated by man, and God has to follow through to be God. He doesn't have any choice if he wants to maintain that he is God. So here, he gives the reason why he would no longer be king. It repenteth me that I have set him up to be king. So what do you suppose he's going to do if he repents? If he set him up, he's going to tear him down, isn't he, from being king? Not he's going to tear Saul down personally. He's just not going to be king any longer. And Samuel was glad. You see, Samuel and Saul were good friends, the best of friends. And it hurt Samuel to think that Saul wasn't going to be king any longer. And it grieved him in his heart. And how long did he cry? How many of you have ever had anybody cry over you all night? You have any friend that would cry over you all night, even if you went out and did what Saul did? Why don't we? Why don't I love you enough, Mark, that if something happened to you and you did something wrong and I knew you were going to be withdrawn by God, why wouldn't I cry over you all night? The only conclusion I can come to is I don't care that much. That's the only conclusion I can reach. I don't care that much. Did I ever cry all night over anything else? Oh, yes, myself. But I've never known anyone who cried all night over somebody else going astray. I've never known anybody, and that's a shame, isn't it? Because we ought to love one another enough that if you do something wrong and I know your soul's in danger, that I ought to cry to God all night. It doesn't mean you just shed tears. It means that he's asking God to change his mind. Cried all night. And that's good, isn't it? But does he still have a job to do? Yes, he still has a job to do. What does he have to do? He has to go tell his best friend, you're not going to be king any longer. Is that an easy job? Mark, would that be easy? No, it's a hard job. Do you ever have to go tell your brother, you are no longer my brother? I can't consider you as my brother. I can't love you like I used to. I can't be intimate with you like I used to. Because you have refused to follow after God, you won't repent, so you can't be my brother anymore. Do you ever have to do that? You ought to have that experience sometime if you've never had it. It's not easy, is it? But sometimes we have to do it. And that's what Samuel has to do here. 12th verse, please, Lowell. What's he doing?
What's Samuel doing?
What's Saul doing?
Saul seems to be pleased and he's making some type of monument or a trophy or something.
What did Eisenhower do when he came back from the war? They marched down through the streets of New York City, a ticker tape parade. He's having a parade. That's what he's doing. He's going from one place to another. Here, I want you to see. Look what I got. What did he get? A gig? He's bragging about it. Agag was a spoil of war, wasn't he? Look at all the animals we brought back. Man, we're going to be rich. He's having a premature victory celebration, isn't he? He's just forgotten that God gave him the victory, hasn't he? If he had one, but he didn't have one. He won the battle and lost the war. Let's watch it here. Now, I want you to watch Saul, how he behaves. What his responses to Samuel are as he goes through here, because Samuel's got to convince him that he's in trouble. He doesn't think he's in trouble. What does he think? Why, God's just tickled to death with me. I killed 99,999 people. And I've got one more I'm going to offer to him when I get back home. No, he never intended to do that. We can prove it. But that's what he said during his victory celebration. Now, he doesn't think he's in trouble. I want you to notice how patient Samuel is with him in bringing him to the realization that he's in trouble, not with Samuel, but with God. Watch it. 13th verse, please. Ori, you want to read? Or Michelle, did you like to read next? What do you think he's doing to Samuel? What do we call that? Oh, yeah, he's bragging. But what does he do to Samuel first? Blessed be thou the Lord. You have suspicions about people who say, well, bless your heart, I'm glad to see you. God has certainly favored you. Do you have your suspicions about people like that? You're a good man. Beware when all men speak well of you, for so did they of what? The false prophets which were of old. Here, Saul, I believe he's saying to Samuel, say on whatever you want to say. I'm glad to see you. You're a good man, Samuel. I've done what God said. You see, he's happy with himself. And I want you to notice how far he goes with this. 14th verse, please. Him. Would you say Samuel is gentle? Or would you say he knocked him right between the eyes? If you stole my car, and I ask you, did you steal my car, Tim? No, I didn't have your car. It's all out there. Yeah, but what's the big dent in the front fender? Where did it come from? I'm trying to be gentle with you, but I'm very firm too, aren't I? Samuel's trying to be gentle with him. He says, how come I hear sheep and oxen bellowing in my ears? Wouldn't you know that some dumb animal would give you away if you did what was wrong? Yes, he was instructed to kill everything that was alive. Yes, if he had done that at the time that God told him to, but see, he kept back Agag and he kept back the best of the animals. So there wouldn't have been any animals with him if he had kept the command of the Lord, would there? Yeah. No, he still wouldn't have been obedient. You know why? Because God had told him where to sacrifice it. Not only what to sacrifice, but where to sacrifice. Just like he tells you and me. I can say, well, I can go out here under a tree and sacrifice to God. No, you can't. There's no way. You can't go out by yourself and sacrifice to God because God has asked you to come together with other people who want to serve God. All right, let's go to the 15th, please. Matt? Now, who did it, Matthew? Who brought them all back? They did. Where were you, Saul? That could have been the next question from God, couldn't it? Where were you, Saul? Aren't you the commander of this outfit? Where were you? It's kind of like the captain of the ship USS Stark, wasn't it? Where was he? I don't know where he was, and he's never said where he was, has he? He was in command. So here, Saul was in command. Now notice here too, what was their intention? What were they going to do with it according to Saul? They were going to sacrifice. Is that what God wanted? He wanted them sacrificed, didn't he? Then what's wrong? What's wrong? Right. They said they were going to sacrifice, but I can prove that they didn't mean that. They didn't ever intend to sacrifice these animals. They intend to take that big Angus heifer home with them and butcher and have a good feed once they got home. I can prove that by what God says to him later on. But it sounds like they got good intentions, doesn't it? Does good intentions overrule God's commandment? Oh, I meant to do good. God said to avoid them, mark them, that cause division, offense, contrary to doctrine. I know that's what God said, but I have to be nice to them, don't I? Do you? You don't treat them as an enemy, but you don't treat them as a brother either, do you? You see, that's one of the hard things in this